Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome to the Punk Rock and Beer Podcast.
Really quickly, before we get into this episode, I wanted to mention my Patreon. Patrons get all of the podcasts a week early. I do giveaways, I do some other stuff, but most importantly, if you want me to review your music or artwork or anything else, Patreon is the way to do that. Every month, I do a call for submissions. All you need to do if you want me to review something is just post it in the comments of that post. Then I will review it live on Twitch for the hundreds of people that tune into every stream and post it on Patreon for everyone to check out. All you need to do is just join at the $10 and up level. Stay tuned for that post and you are good to go. So if that sounds cool to you and you want me to review your music, artwork, or anything else, hit the link in the show notes for this episode. And thank you very much to everyone who supports over on Patreon. Bradley Hall, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. How goes it? You okay?
Never been better. This is the best day of my life because I am here talking to you.
Oh, flattered. Truly.
Well, I am a huge fan of your content. There's a lot of things that I want to talk about with you, but let's start by talking about your new video, because this is a topic that I've heard about a lot. Kind of, you know, I'm friends with a lot of you people meaning internet guitarists. I'm friends with a lot of people in bands, and whether it's bands or fans, it seems like, you know, there's a lot of people who don't respect the internet guitarists. And I think you did a great job of summarizing it.
Thank you. I mean, I was a bit hesitant to make that video because, you know, I thought it was just going to come across as like, you know, salty, you know, or people making bad things about me on the internet. I'm going to get my own back on them. But like, I tried not to make it too much like that. And I don't care if people think it's like that, whatever. They think what they want to think.
Yeah.
In recent years, I sort of like trying to raise awareness for more like, you know, people who don't keep in touch with the progression of the music industry in the way that we do. You know, we're very much in our own little bubble. You know, we keep up to date with things. We sort of know what's going on. But, you know, the vast majority of casual music listeners don't, and YouTube watchers don't really. So I sort of trying to keep people a bit more informed about where the music industry is at these days and how, like, the sort of like this old school traditionalist mindset is sort of like damaging a little bit.
So what I've found when I put out a video is that, you know, from reading the comments and thinking about a little bit more and stuff, my thinking around it always crystallizes, you know, a little bit more over the next day or two. And after putting out the video, what are your thoughts? Why do they hate internet guitarists? You put out a few arguments, but have you landed on one since then?
No, I mean, like, I never script my videos ever.
Oh, really? But this one, you must have scripted, right?
Yeah, this one was, okay. Yeah. Most of my things are very much just like sort of impromptu, off the cuff. But yeah, this I very much did. I spent like a good 2 days or so scripting that one out. So I did think very carefully about it. And honestly, I was so bored editing that fucking video. I haven't really thought about it much since. But
okay.
But yeah. No, pretty much I stick by what I said in the video. I mean, my thoughts haven't really changed in it since then, no.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what I think, and go let on. Me know, agree, disagree, whatever. The thing that I hear a lot, so you were kind of focusing on the fan perspective, you know, the Loudwire people talking shit in the comments and stuff. And I don't really expect those people to get it, because like, it's not their job to get it. And if they came there to read headlines about fucking, you know, David Lee Roth or whatever, I don't expect them to understand these things. It's irritating, but I don't expect them to understand it. What irritates me and what's disappointing is when I hear from people in bands who say that kind of stuff, where sort of the idea is that if you're I'll say a creator of any kind, but I think especially YouTubers, the idea is that if you're a guitar YouTuber, that you're not a real musician and you only do YouTube because you couldn't make it as like a real musician and you suck, and so you did things the easy way, you know, by starting YouTube. You didn't really touch on that in the video, unless I'm mistaken.
I did briefly. So I used the comments as like a jumping off point. But yeah, the biggest comment that I get most often is about, you know, how I should be touring or why aren't I touring?
Right.
And yeah, it's similar to what you were saying, like people assume because I'm not in a professional touring band, then yeah, you know, I don't have what it takes. You know, I'm some sort of like, you know, I'm sort of hack like that didn't make it. And now I'm just sort of like, you know, making ends meet, doing what I can.
Well, here's the dirty secret is that most people in touring bands suck and they're also hacks.
Everyone's a hack. Like, who cares?
Well, I mean, it's the truth that just because someone is in a touring band doesn't mean they're a good musician. I mean, I'm friends with lots of producers that complain and talk shit all the time about how so-and-so from this, you know, legitimate band showed up and they can't play their shit. And like the idea that, you know, just because you're in a band that you're a better musician is like, that's just false.
Yeah. I'm just trying to make it clear to people that it's just two different routes to the same, you know, the same goal. And like, you know, some people, like you said, some people who tour and they're terrible musicians, but there are some great musicians that tour. And likewise, you know, there are some terrible YouTubers that are big as well.
Sure.
You know, who can't really play. So whatever, it's all down to, you know, the specific context.
Well, you did talk about this in the video, but for anybody who hasn't seen it, I really liked the way you talked about touring, because to me, I can't think of anything I would hate more than being in a touring. I mean, if you're like Ozzy and you're flying private between shows and you get catering and shit, okay. And you can bring a massage therapist. All right. I could live with that. But anything below that to me just sounds like fucking torture. Can you talk about why you have chosen not to be in a touring band?
Basically, so I sort of discovered YouTube very late, I guess, compared to a lot of you guys who have been doing it for a while. I didn't even know there was like a sort of a whole guitar niche world thing on YouTube until like 2018. I sort of discovered all that stuff. So before then, I was sort of going down the whole sort of like band route, but we never really got anywhere, sort of in a bit of like a limbo of what I wanted to do with music. That's why YouTube was really like a godsend to me, because it sort of gave me a creative outlet that I was always sort of looking for. Because I always enjoyed playing guitar, but I didn't really, like you said, I didn't really want to go touring. It didn't really sound like much fun to me. Yeah, everyone who I spoke to like was touring, it just sounds like fucking miserable experience. Like, why would I want to put myself through that, you know? And like, there's not really much money in it anymore unless you're playing at like a really high level. And so it's just like, you know, why do people do that? I mean, I guess like I kind of feel like I want to experience it once. I feel like maybe it's something like all musicians should maybe try, but it's just not viable at the moment. Maybe things will like get better in time, but you know, in this whole post-COVID world, it's just not viable to tour at all unless you're, you know, just doing like a little tour around your like county or state or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, nothing serious.
Well, you made a great point there, which is the one I have always made. Like, if your goal is to get your music out there to people, playing all these, like you talked about bands playing to 100 people a night, that would be on the high side. I mean, if you're lucky as like a small band, you're playing to 100 people a night, more likely it's probably gonna be a couple dozen people a night. Whereas you can make a TikTok or a YouTube video or whatever that, even if you absolutely suck at TikTok, like you put out anything and it's probably going to reach at least a few hundred people. And that's something that you made in, you know, whatever, like a few minutes.
Yeah, this is something that I've really sort of like grown to dislike the most, actually, like more so than like, you know, the people that was ragging on it, like comment sections. It's just like these, especially in metal bands, you get these sort of like overly sort of like artiste sort of guys that are just like, you know, all about their art and they don't really care about like anything else. They just want to write their music, you know, release some like some album on Bandcamp and like link it to their Facebook friends, and then like, you know, and then just like complain that like no one's buying it, and then like, you know, go back to square one and repeat. And like, you know, if you say to them, oh, you know, just get yourself on social media, like just do like a couple of TikToks or a couple of Instagrams, I think reels a week or whatever. And they're like, oh, well, why would I want to do that? You know, that's not, it's all about the music. Should all be about the music, you know? And it's just like such a, oh, like, don't know, cringe backwards way of thinking to me. I just don't like it. I mean, people say like, you know, TikTok and Instagram are cringe. Like thinking like that to me is way more cringe.
Yeah. I mean, to me, look, I'm not here to put down what anybody is doing. But to me, what's cringe is like spending years and years playing to 8 people, you know, in a bar that are half paying attention. That's embarrassing to me.
I mean, I do try and keep an open mind, you know, and appreciate that some people just want to do their music. I mean, yeah, that's cool. But like, I'm just talking about so like from the perspective of people who are like, you know, who want to make a career out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure 90% of musicians do, whether they admit it or not, they do want to have their music heard by as many people as possible.
Of course.
But some people just don't like to admit it, you know?
The second that you put your music out into the public, you are saying, I would like people to pay attention to this, right? Like if you just write music and play it, you know, record it and play it for yourself in your bedroom, like that's totally cool. But the second you put it out into the world, you're saying, I would like other people to listen to and enjoy this. And, you know, the idea that there's a world in which you can just be a guitar operator and then have, you know, money and attention dropped on your lap is just fucking fiction. And I don't think it's ever been the case. I mean, back whatever, before social media, you had to go out and play all these shows and meet people and blah, 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 blah. Like you still had to put in the work. There's never been a world where you just get to sit in your bedroom and play guitar and success just falls in your lap.
Yeah. I guess it's maybe quite daunting to people as well, because like, as much as like the opportunities you have now and the amount you can earn, the amount of reach you can get, you know, is like unlimited really, but also like, you know, the amount of work you have to put in is also like unlimited really. And maybe people don't like that. They don't like the idea of having to put in all the extra hours on stuff that isn't music. I think that's what puts a lot of people off.
Well, then don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's like Roddy Coleman says, everyone wants to be a bodybuilder. Nobody wants to lift those heavy ass weights.
Yeah. It's because you have to really approach music from like an entrepreneurial sort of perspective now, and you know, musician entrepreneurial kind of like, you know, don't really sort of like gel most of the time, you know.
Right. And you know, I think that's I think that's why the YouTuber, you know, creator musicians, it's because it's not just guitarists, there's people that do it in drums and vocals and everything else, do well, is because whether you kind of think of it that way or not, especially being a YouTuber because it's monetized, is running your own small business.
Mm-hmm.
And like you have to think about those things. You have to like do it all yourself or hire people to do it. And so I think to me, like that should be the template for everyone. Even if you don't care about social media, just as a musician, like I find it just strange that there's like all these tools that are there for you and then almost all of them are free. If you want people to hear your music, why wouldn't you use those tools?
Yeah, for sure. What I like as well about this newer approach is that I think I said this in the video as well, that, you know, you can be on sort of like at ground level with your fans, like all the time, and interact with them whenever you want to. And you sort of like grow with them and like, you know, you get feedback from them in real time, which can help you grow even further. And, you know, again, that sort of like positive feedback loop that just sort of grows exponentially. I'm like, why would you not want that? Like, your fans make you who you are. I mean, why would you not want to, you know, leverage that? Yeah, so it just seems incredibly sort of like, you know, anti-fans. But I do think like the sort of old school approach is very anti-fans. You know, you get, so sure, you see all like this footage of, you know, the Led Zeppelin guys or whatever, you know, like signing all their like the kids' guitars or whatever and autographs at like outside shows sometimes. But like, you know, that's not really like real fan interaction. It's a bit like plastic, you know. The way people do it now, that's real like fan interaction to me.
They want validation is what they want. They don't want fan interaction. They want to feel like a star.
Exactly. Yeah, that's affirmation.
And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, I guess. But to me, all of this comes down to ego, is people who believe that, you know, the world should operate the way they would like it to operate. And if it doesn't work that way, that there's been sort of some sort of injustice, you know, that like it's entitlement to me. Like I'm entitled to just sit in my room and noodle around a guitar and people will lavish me with praise, attention, and enough money to have a comfortable life, which is just like, it's insanely entitled.
Yeah, yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, you are offering, and anybody else is saying, well, here's the pathway to what you want. And they're like, well, no, not like that.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, the way bands used to operate, you know, they just used to hold themselves away from the world, drop an album, tour it and then again disappear. And then it's like, you know, where's the fan, you know, interaction, appreciation right. with that? It's just like you're just living in your own little like bubble. And you just can't operate like that anymore. It's just impossible. And like, why would you want?
I wouldn't want to. I like engaging with people and hearing what they think and getting to know them and stuff. I think that's like the best part of it.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I think that you mentioned in the video, you said, I think maybe there's some jealousy here, but I'm not comfortable making that argument. I am comfortable making that argument.
Go on then.
So I will make it for you. I think it's a lot of people, again, it comes down to like ego and entitlement, in my opinion. I think there's a lot of people out there who believe that they are better musicians than you or Jared or whoever else, and they should be the ones getting this attention because I am better than them and I deserve all that attention. And so I think that is, at least from musicians, I think that's almost 100% of it.
Perhaps. I mean, like, yeah, I just don't like, I don't feel comfortable convincing that. It just makes me sound like a fucking, you know, presumptuous ass. But it does bother me sometimes, I guess. I see what you're saying, like, especially from musicians who are like really, really, you know, technically amazing,
yeah.
but they, you know, they haven't really got anywhere. They, you know, they've just sort of like struggling, getting by. But, you know, they don't really like put any like persona into their content or whatever, or their music. They just, you know, sit on their desk, like head down,
right,
playing guitar, like, you know, like super well, but they don't really do anything else. And like, they're just so confused, like these guys, about like why it's not working for them. And I think, I guess, yeah, I can definitely see like the envy at that point. And like, in that way, it makes sense to me. Yeah.
Or people in kind of a mediocre band, you know, that are like kind of, like you said, doing everything. Yeah, I guess the way I would think about it is like with these people, they're doing everything they're doing is there's nothing wrong with it, but there's nothing right with it either.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just like, well, why would anybody pay attention to this? If you're just like a competent metal band, well, there are competent metal guitarists. There's a million of those. And this is not the world we live in. People forget that this is not just music. It's the entertainment business. You have to entertain people.
Exactly. And that's what I say to people is like, unless you're in like the sort of top 0.001% of, you know, like talented players, you know people like that Japanese guy Ichika Nito,
or yeah,
like,
or Jason, like that,
who just like, who can get, they can get by on just their talent, but that's like a very, very, very rare exception. So, you know, most people, you know, I say you have to inject some personality into it, because, you know, people relate to you just as much as you're playing and your music, so it's super important,
right? And I don't know why people are resistant to that, because to me that's an empowering, like that's a good thing. You should like be excited to hear like, hey, people want to get to know you.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what you want? And I don't know, maybe people are like afraid, you know, of judgment or afraid. It's like, it's a weird thing where like they're simultaneously, they want attention, but they also are afraid of attention.
Well, it makes you vulnerable. Once you start talking, put yourself out there, it makes you vulnerable. People aren't
right
always comfortable with that.
Right. Which, I mean, that is true. You know, that like any YouTuber, you know, we all get tons and tons and tons of negative feedback. That's part of the deal.
Yeah.
But that is part of the deal. You know, there's no world in which you only get positive attention.
No, absolutely. Remember like my, you know, when I first started YouTube, and Instagram and stuff, yeah, you know, I wasn't talking or anything in my videos. I would just do my guitar playing, and then I started to talk, and it was like I was really insecure about it at first. You know, I had this habit of like tilting my head on the side every time I would talk, and I just it was horrible, like looking back at it now. But you know, you get used to it, and you practice, and you get comfortable with it. And then like it also depends on like how thick-skinned you are. You know, some people just really can't handle any negative comments like at all. I mean, for me personally, you know, 99% of it just goes over my head. It's just like white noise. But, you know, some people really take it to heart. You know, you can see the YouTubers who like really are insecure about it. You know, they sort of like highlight every negative comment and like make a massive reply to it, and, you know, like post it in their Insta stories. You know, these are the people who are, you know, are a bit iffy about it. But yeah,
I used to do more of that. Like, I just thought I was doing it mostly just because I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
But I realized that it made me look like one of those people. A couple people were like, why do you always give them so much attention?
Mm.
And so I stopped doing it for that exact reason.
Yeah.
And I just, it's a weird thing that people, you know, it's like they want attention, but they don't want attention. And that's sort of the inherent, I guess, that's the part I don't understand about their psychology. Because, you know, on the one hand, these are the people that say they don't care about commercial success, but at the same time, obviously they do want commercial success. I don't think I have a creative person's brain. And so they just, it's like observing an alien species to me. Can you help translate?
I mean, I've like a bit of both. I mean, I've had that very much sort of like, you know, businessy, entrepreneurial sort of mindset, but I also do have like a creative side too. And like, I think that's sort of part of what's made my channel successful. I know how to sort of marry both of those worlds. But yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, it almost fade out, I think, over time. You know, as younger musicians get older and older musicians get older and sort of fade out, I think it'll become less of a thing. But we're just sort of at this awkward sort of tipping point at the moment. It's sort of like a clash of like two different worlds.
Yeah, you're right. To me, it's like, man, this has been going on for at least 10 years. So like, how is this still a thing? But I think you're right that it is still, you know, these things take longer than to me they probably should. So for you as a musician, do you feel like your creative itch is satisfied with like what you do? Or is there a world in which like, oh, I wish that people would just give me attention for my original songs? Or like, how do you feel about that?
No, not at all. Well, I feel like in the minority in that aspect. I feel like a lot of YouTubers sort of get a bit burnt out with making content. They just want to take some time out to focus on some original music.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really like writing original music, like not solo stuff anyway. It doesn't really interest me. I just get frustrated. I like writing stuff with like other people sometimes in like a band setting, but I just like making silly videos. I mean, that's what I get the most sort of kicks out of. I mean, that satisfies my creative urges like plenty. I think like, and that's what's important on YouTube, isn't it? Number one priority should always be to be conscious of not burning out. And so you need to make content that, you know, you enjoy. And like, for example, if I had to make video essays like that last essay all the time, I would just get burnt out within like a month. Like, you know, once in a while, it's kind of fun to rant like that. But, you know, as long as the majority of what you work on is what you enjoy, what you want to do, then yeah, it's fine.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and
conditions. 18 plus. Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like, I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode. And also, I want to thank Rockabilia for sponsoring this episode. If you're into merch, and if you're listening to this, then I know you probably are, then you definitely need to check out Rockabilia, because they have more band merch than anybody else on the planet. Over 500,000 items. Rockabilia has everything from the usual stuff like hoodies, t-shirts, and tank tops, to other stuff, accessories like belts, watches, footwear, all kinds of stuff for both men and women, which is pretty cool because my wife is always complaining about how hard it is to find good merch. They even have a children's section, and they have a home decor section. So if you want to get an Opeth pint glass or a Dark Throne skateboard, they have got you covered. Rockabilia also has a lot of really cool posters and flags, which as a fan of visual arts is something that I really appreciate, and some unique items like backstage passes and tab books. I mean, you could spend all day looking through this stuff, and I would have killed to have something like this when I was a kid, so I am glad that this exists. So if you want to check out Rockabilia and get some new merch, all you need to do is go to rockabilia.com or hit the link in the show notes of this episode, and make sure to use the discount code PRMBA, that is like punk rock MBA, to get 15% off your order. And thanks again to Rockabilia for sponsoring this episode. You mentioned like the YouTubers would take a break to focus on original music, which is like totally okay. And I'm not suggesting anyone shouldn't do that. But that kind of brings up a point that I think there is some truth to the people who say that a lot of these YouTube guitarists are frustrated musicians, because I think that is kind of true. There's a lot of them that are like, well, yeah, people like me for my videos, but I really wish that they just liked me for my original music.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can sympathize with that, but like, you also have to appreciate the audience that you have. You know, you have it for a reason. Yes. People appreciate you for what you have. And, you know, some people say, oh, I'd rather be doing this instead, but you know, just, you know, be grateful for what you've got and make the most of it. You know, some people would kill to have, you know, that audience that you have. So, you know, suck it up and find a way to balance both.
That is exactly what I try to remind myself. I'm like, oh, do I really have to make another video about nu metal?
Yeah.
And I wish I could talk about this, that, or the other. But then I try to remind myself, like, man, I'm just so grateful that anyone gives a shit what I have to say about anything at all.
Yeah.
Exactly. I try to stay in that headspace.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very easy to get lost in your own bubble. And like, you know, I prefer in an ideal world to be making skit videos that are like more general, you know, not just guitar based, just sort of like, I don't know, like, you know, that Gus Johnson guy on YouTube, like I love stuff like that, just sort of like general stupid skits and stuff.
So you're going to pivot to a prank channel.
Oh, that'd be the dream. No, but I'm super happy with what I'm doing now. And yeah, you just got to remind yourself that, you know, if I could travel back in time, like 5 years, and then like tell my old self what I'm doing now, you know, I wouldn't believe it. So you just got to remind yourself about that.
Yeah. If you went to me 5 years ago and said, you'll have, you know, this big of an audience and make this much money talking about, you know, nu metal, whatnot, be like, okay, sign me the fuck up. Sounds amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, back then I was working like a software engineering job, which was like, okay. But, you know, I was always looking for a way out, like really. So
yeah, tell me about that, because I was surprised. There's not too many people that come from like, I mean, software engineer, it doesn't pay as well in Europe as it does here, but like that's a very good job. Not too many people that especially kind of take that path. What kind of stuff were you working on?
I worked on .NET web APIs, like .NET Core stuff, and like the later half of my career.
I mean, like what kind of products?
I guess you know what web APIs are, right? Yeah. Just coding that, like the back end to those.
Yeah. What kind of products?
So I worked for a company that did like legal accounting software. It's like really dull stuff. But yeah, like the sort of software you have in, what do you call them in over there? Like attorneys, I guess. Mm-hmm. We call them
barristers.
Barristers, yeah. Like, yeah, people like software in those offices where you have to like keep the client and the, I don't know what you call them, the client and the office account, like balance and stuff like that. So they, you know, comply with the regulations and all that.
See, I'm probably the only person in the world that like B2B software as a service is like actually kind of my passion. Like, right. I talk about nu metal on YouTube because like, you know, because it's an opportunity for me. But like in a perfect world, I think I would rather be building B2B SaaS products.
Really? Oh my God.
Yes.
Okay.
That's my actual passion.
It's not as I don't want to say glamorous. That's not the right word to use, but you know, it's not as exciting as you might think it is.
Well, I mean, I do it. I mean, I've been running, you know, a subscription technology product for 10 years. I worked at a...
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing, I used to write code.
I was like, so is it like a side hustle now then for you? Or?
YouTube is my side hustle.
Okay.
That's how I think about it. Even though I actually spend more time on it.
It's a lot of time to put into a side hustle.
It is. Yeah, it is. I never kind of expected it to be that way, but I used to like write code back in the LAMP days, if you remember that, Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. Back in the day, back in the old days, when they were, back in the old days when you could kind of get by being self-taught, which is a lot harder to do now. But like I'm taking a React course right now because we have a full-time engineer who reports to me and he uses React for everything. And so I thought, well, I should probably have some experience with this.
I mean, that world moves so fast as well. I feel like if I went back into it now, I wouldn't even recognize what was going on. I feel like the stuff I was doing was like pretty old school.
Yeah.
Still, I guess like, I mean, everything's in like Python now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I hear, I mean, I guess who the hell uses C#, but I don't know.
Microsoft people.
Yeah.
Well, Microsoft headquarters is right up the way from us. So we got a lot of C# people around here.
Right.
Still popular. But
I always wonder why that is. Why? Because over here and probably in Europe as well, like programming doesn't really pay. I mean, it pays okay, but like not like it does in the US. I mean, that's mad how much it pays over there for like the same job.
Yeah. I mean, it's not hard to be, you know, 28 years old making $200,000 to $250,000 a year as a software engineer here. That's not hard at all.
Yeah, that's insane. Like, unless you're a lead developer, like you're not going to earn more than like 50-60k. Like, not a chance.
Yeah,
unless you're working like a mega company in like London or something. But you know, most people don't.
I could explain why, but that would lead us to a discussion about finance that nobody wants to hear about. But to make a long story short, it's largely because it's much harder to do business in Europe, and therefore venture capitalists don't invest as much in Europe. And that's why, to make a long story short.
Okay, noted.
But yeah, I feel like when I watch your videos, though, I can sort of see the engineer brain at work, if that makes sense.
Okay, how so?
Well, you think, I mean, for example, this video essay that you made, you think in a more kind of systematic, logical way than I think a lot of musicians do, who musicians or sort of creative people in general are very non-linear thinkers.
Okay.
And I have like an engineer brain, not a creative brain for sure. So I can sort of see that in other people. Even though you make ridiculous, silly videos, I can kind of see the engineer brain there, if that makes sense.
Okay, that's interesting. Never really thought about it like that.
I mean, even just the fact that you kind of, I mean, as an engineer, you have to accept constraints, right? It's like, well, I mean, everything is a constrained optimization problem, which is basically what I think YouTube is.
Okay.
If that makes sense. You know, the audience wants this, the algorithm demands that. And, you know, I have this much time. So what am I going to do with those constraints?
Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure I can add much to that, but it's very interesting. I feel like it's not really something I'm conscious of. Maybe when I am conscious of it, is it more about like how to structure videos? I would think of like people that have too much of a creative brain. For example, like when you're making shorts, you know, the main way that I see people like fail with shorts is they just want to like put as much in them as possible, make them really like bloated. You know, they don't want to cut anything out. But like you have to approach that sort of content like very systematically. Like you said, you have to chop, you know, like you're doing coding, I guess, just remove all the bloat and just have like, you know, the absolute bare bones to make it function. I mean, that's how you need to approach most content, I suppose.
Well, you have really cracked the code on shorts, it seems.
I mean, I feel like I did, but they've changed something with shorts since like they announced monetization. When was that, like
a month ago or something?
2 or 3 months ago, yeah.
Yeah.
And I really feel like they've changed some back end there, because I had shorts cracked for like 2 years, because I got on them like straight away.
Oh my God, I didn't even realize they'd been here for 2 years. That's...
Yeah, they've been around for quite a while in like beta and stuff. I was consistently getting like between 200k to like a million on most of my shorts. And since pretty much dead on since they announced monetization, it's gone like right down. I can barely get like, I don't know. I just delete the ones that do badly. Like some of them don't even get like 20k now. It's mad. I don't know why that is. I don't know if you're like me, but like when you release a video, I sort of like sit and look at the fucking blue graph like the first hour or so, like meticulously. I mean, it feels like really sad doing that, but I feel like you learn a lot from it.
Yeah, a lot of people will tell you not to do that, but I think that's bad advice, because how else will you know what's working?
Yeah, and you can see the algorithm like in play, like in real time. So like, why would you not want to look at that? And the way the graph moved very much like changed big time compared to how it was. It was always like very much the same. And I know it's like you get a lot less views from brows now on shorts, which I think is a big thing. That they don't like having shorts on with thumbnails. Don't know if you noticed that, but like for a long time, you could have thumbnails on shorts. And I always did like proper thumbnails on shorts still. You know, a lot of people thought it was a waste of time, but it made a big difference. But now like you can't. And I think that definitely shows. So now you're just at the mercy of like the short shelf. It sort of like seems to pump it for like the first hour or so and then just like kill it and maybe resurrect it again like later on if it's good, which I don't really like how that works. It's a bit more like, I don't know, a bit more like TikTok. No, it's not even like TikTok really, is it? Because I just don't like how it works.
I feel like they don't really know what they want to do with shorts.
Yeah, I don't know. I liked how it worked before, but I've got to try and figure it out all again now.
I want shorts to just disappear. I don't like it at all, but that's partly because I'm not successful at it. So I want to kill the features that don't benefit
with
me.
Your sort of content, it's a lot. I think it's a lot harder to make good content for shorts with the sort of stuff you do.
It is.
I'm not even
sure
how you would, you're trying to like really make micro content out of reactions. It's kind of difficult.
Yeah, I have somebody that makes clips of them for me and it does okay. You know, whatever. I just sort of accept that. But well, tell me when and why did you decide to start doing YouTube? If it sounds like you were kind of not paying attention to YouTube for a long time, what made you kind of jump into it?
Yeah, so I entered a guitar competition in 2018, I think it was. It was like Guitarist of the Year, run by like Music Radar. It's like a, yeah, I've probably heard of them. And entered that and like a part of it had to upload it to YouTube. Well, I sort of like dabbled in YouTube over the years, like maybe upload once every like, you know, couple of years, but not really pay attention to it.
Yeah.
And uploaded that and it sort of like got a little bit of traction and it sort of like piqued my interest. And then I just sort of like started studying like, you know, the whole guitar niche on there and discovering all like the YouTubers like Jared and Stevie T and all that stuff. And yeah, it just sort of really interested me because I always liked pissing around making stupid videos when I was younger. And it was just a cool opportunity to sort of like revisit that and but in, you know, sort of like stick my playing in there as well. I mean, at first I was making boring shit like lessons and stuff, but like,
right,
you know, who wants to see that? So I sort of shifted to more like an entertainment thing. I feel like in any niche, which is interesting, like, whenever you go the more entertainment route, it's a lot broader compared to doing something more specific in your niche. But like, if you want to go broader, then like more entertainment angle is always the way to go.
Yeah, I had the same thing happen that I originally started out making videos about business, which I said is kind of, that's my actual passion. It's like helping people build business and make money and stuff. And nobody cared at all. My videos just ate shit for whatever the first 8 or 9 months. And then I switched to talking about music since that's something I obviously know about, and almost instantly it took off. And you know, I've seen that happen so many times on so many different things I've worked on. Is like the harder you try to like make something informative or useful, the less people will care. And of course now, and at first I was, that was like frustrating or confusing to me, but now I think about it, it's like, well, nobody wants to take a vitamin, they want to eat ice cream.
Yeah, that's a good point. I also feel like videos like that are more like search based as well. And like videos that are search based, you know, sort of generally like sort of get views here and there, but like, you know, targeting the homepage or like the big clickbait stuff, you know, that's where the views are.
And there's almost nobody out there that gets views with like really substantial, like meaty, informative content. Even the people, for example, so like I said, I've been doing like product management for a long time. There's a YouTube channel called Product Led Growth, which is fucking amazing. They put out these videos about product management. They wrote 2 books about it that are incredible. Like they just give you so much, like they give you information that you should be paying thousands of dollars for. Their videos get like 85 views.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, this is insane. Or like AWS, their YouTube channel gets hundreds of views. They'll put out some hour-long thing about Docker, you know, whatever, containers, something like that.
Oh, bringing back horrible memories. Docker shit, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really good information. Nobody gives a fuck. It's fucking Amazon, and their videos get like 150 views.
Yeah. I feel like that sort of stuff like belongs in like the, you know, the old YouTube. It's just not really conducive to the way YouTube works now. It's just completely entertainment based.
Yeah. And like you might think like, oh, I'm gonna give people all this like super valuable knowledge that's gonna make their life better, blah, blah, blah. People are gonna love this. Well, turns out they don't. Nobody likes going to the gym. They want to go to McDonald's.
Yeah, totally.
So what made you kind of realize that this was viable as a full-time job?
Well, I think I discovered like Social Blade. And so it was like looking up on my favorite channel, just sort of like curious about how much they make. I mean, like, Social Blade gives you like a really fucking vague, like super vague idea, yeah, but like,
but it's not
even
wrong
on the low end. Even on the low end, it seemed like, oh, that could be cool.
Yeah.
And I feel like, once I got monetized and sort of, you know, start to see like, you know, the paychecks coming, you know, like small at first, you know, it sort of gets you more motivated when the money's coming in and, you know, you see it build up over time. And then, but I always knew I wanted to do it full time, but it was really hard finding like that point to, you know, commit to it and jump off. And I was like, I guess a bit too scared to.
Yeah.
I feel like if I had more of that sort of creative brain in me, I probably would have done it earlier, but the sort of like, you know, like you said, the analytic or systematic or whatever, like side of me was a bit like, you know, hold off a little bit. But once COVID hit and we had to start working from home full time, just like Zoom calls, like 4 hours a day. I'm just so done with IT. Yeah. I was like, fuck it. I'll just give it a go. You know?
So 2020 is when you made the jump to doing it full time.
Yeah. I think it was, 2020. It was like, the start of the year, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's not very long ago.
No, it's pretty recent. So yeah, I think it's my third year anniversary coming up in like January or February, I think. So around that time.
Okay.
Being full time.
But it sounds like you do approach it like a job. You know, there's some people that kind of like, you know, they're a little bit lazy. Seems like you, you know, take it pretty seriously.
Yeah. I don't know. I call it more of an addiction rather than taking it seriously, but yeah, I don't know. I just really enjoy it. And what I love about YouTube as well is, you know, if you keep uploading, then your growth is like completely linear. You know, it's just, it's always always on the up. You know, the more you put into it, the more you get out. It's not like something else where you're just going to have like droughts for like a year or something. Like if you were doing, I don't know, something more standard, like, I mean,
TikTok is kind of like that.
Yeah. I don't know. Or if you've been doing some more traditional, like an electrical building, you know, right, where you just have like droughts for months on end where like no money coming in. Yeah, there's always something coming in,
right,
from YouTube.
Yeah, the recurring revenue.
And I don't know. It's just like, it's just sort of like almost like recession proof as well. I don't know. It's just a really good career to have.
I think so too. And I mean, obviously it's difficult and it's not a sure thing or anything like that. But I kind of think so too, because like, even if I quit making videos tomorrow, I would probably still make thousands of dollars a month for like years.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly.
And that's like, that's pretty cool. There's not many other things that if you stop working on them, they still pay you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, people talk about like passive income a lot, you know, not many things are truly passive income, but you know, after you put in that initial work to make a video, it's passive. Then after that, you know, for the rest of your life, isn't it? So as close to passive as you can get, I suppose.
I think pretty much anybody can be successful on YouTube as long as they're willing to like put in the work to like figure out what works and learn from each video, because the beginning is going to be slow and nobody's going to watch your videos and that's going to suck. But as long as you learn from it, you don't have to be super talented to be successful on YouTube. I mean, I'm proof of that.
People say like the YouTube algorithm is like, you know, some sort of black magic. It's super complicated. But, you know, once you realize that you're at the algorithm, it's just like your audience and it just makes a lot more sense. And like, I think I told you guys in the group chat about this, but I started like a brand new, like you call it like automation channel. Two or 3 months ago. And that's been super fun to like starting a channel from scratch, putting everything that I've learned into play. And that's starting to pick up a bit recently. It's at like 350 subs now. I had a few videos like, sort of like reach nearly 10K. And that's going to be monetized maybe in like 2 months, I reckon.
Okay. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So this is like a new thing that people have started doing within like the past couple of years. It's got a few names. Some people call it like anonymous YouTube channels or like faceless channels or like YouTube automation, where basically you do a channel, but you outsource everything or as much as you can. So you come up with like you pick a channel niche, you come up with like a name and like what your themes are going to be, what sort of content you'll make.
Like everything about golden retrievers or something.
Yeah. And then you come up with, usually you would come up with the video topics yourself. So say you write a list of like 20 topics a month or something, and then you give them to a script writer that you find on like Upwork or Fiverr or whatever. And then you get the scripts back, and then you pay for a voiceover to voice them. You get that back, and then you send that to an editor to edit it. And then I do the thumbnails myself because I know what works. I feel like it's quite a hard thing to try and outsource unless someone's like, you know, really knows the game. Yeah. And then you just get like a sort of like a production line going, just like videos continuously, you know, being churned in and out, and doing it like this, you can produce content like way quicker than you can if you were to do it yourself. And at the moment, like, we're doing it like 3 times a week. We're going to up it to maybe like 5 when we're monetized. And the idea is that you sort of pick niches that have good CPMs. Mm-hmm. And so you just churn out as many videos you can and just make as much money as you can.
Have you tried ChatGPT for scripts?
No. So we tried Jasper. Have you heard of that? It's probably a similar thing. It's like a good Jasper bot.
Yeah. ChatGPT is pretty fucking good.
Yeah. And so it was okay, but some of the fact checking wasn't there.
Oh,
like, it
yeah,
was,
right.
some,
right.
Not all the information was correct.
Right.
Like, the hooks were pretty bad. I feel like the hooks are, like, you know, is super essential. You need that sort of like human element in there, which is kind of hard to replicate.
Right.
We're just doing like top 10 fact videos, and like the facts themselves were like fine. They were written great. It was mostly usable, but we still have to spend the time sort of like manually going over them, changing a few bits and adding our own hooks. So just sort of, you know, spending a lot of time, and it's expensive as well. So it was cheaper just to get people to write it and less time as well. So.
Right.
But like, it's very close, that stuff, but like not quite there yet.
Yeah. I haven't tried all of them, but there's also the voice AIs too. So
yeah,
I'm wondering if this will be like, there's going to be an arbitrage opportunity here for people to have ChatGPT or whatever, write the script, feed it to a voice AI. There's also services, there's products that will do videos, like automated videos.
There's one called Pictory that does pretty much AI video editing at like a basic level.
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of them. I don't know that.
This is exactly what I was thinking at the first thing. I was like, oh, get really clever with it. You know, AI yeah. generate like, you know, the script voiceover and the editing. We tried it, but it's like the quality of the content was like, I don't know.
Not quite there.
Not really there.
I bet it will be soon though.
It was close. Yeah. And also YouTube's a bit picky about monetizing channels with text to speech.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. It's a bit of a gray area. So it's best not to risk it.
Right. Right. I see. Well, it's a cool idea, though. I think I like that idea. It reminds me of something. I don't know if you know who Joey Sturgis is, but he's into that kind of thing. It's like, that is something Joey would do. but I guess to the earlier point, you know, that's the kind of stuff anybody could do. Even if you don't like want to be a personality on YouTube, YouTube is still like a great opportunity for anybody.
Yeah.
You know, doing stuff like that.
Yeah, and like, that's actually like there's a massive market of people selling courses to do this stuff that are like making an absolute killing. As you know, they're sort of like selling that dream, taking pictures right. of themselves outside there with their Maseratis with their gold YouTube plaques, you know, that's all that sort of stuff. It's a bit scammy because they're sort of selling it's like, you know, anyone can do this with just yeah. like follow these simple steps. Like, anyone can, but like you still need to make the content good, and you need to right. know how to write clickbaity, you know, titles and like good thumbnails. So there is a element of like skill involved, but like it's not something you can't learn, but right. they make it out to be a lot easier than it really is.
Yeah, there's plenty of channels out there with a faceless creator, because I know that's a thing a lot of people are worried about. They're scared of putting their face on video, which I understand, because I hate looking at my face and people call me ugly and shit all the time, and I don't like it either. But you don't have to have your face in your videos.
Yeah.
It's really whatever you want it to be.
Or do what I did. And just, if you're just making stupid faces all the time, then you're sort of like immune to criticism in that regard. So,
yeah. Cool. Well, I will let you go, but I appreciate you joining the show, and I'm a fan, and great to connect, and thank you for adding me to the group chat. It's really, it's been really helpful.
Thank you so much. Been a pleasure. We'll catch you later.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home, think about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.